What's the path to comprehensive immigration reform? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, the Florida conversation on immigration as we preview this week's statewide summit. Get on the line now with your calls. It's 549-2937 as we talk immigration reform in the Sunshine State. Then later, we welcome back to the show Florida Man and New York Times bestselling author Steve Barry. But first this hour, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The U.S. passed a grim milestone yesterday, 500,000 now dead from coronavirus. In Florida, cases stand at 1.872 million. Hospitalizations are up, deaths are up, but here's another good number for you. Nearly 2.7 million Florida residents have now gotten at least one dose of the vaccine. And let's hope those numbers rise exponentially in the next several weeks. Now, the Biden administration continues to prioritize COVID relief right now. But another big bill the White House has sent to Congress deals with immigration reform. The U.S. Citizenship Act of 2021 would permit undocumented people to apply for temporary legal status and then for green cards 5 years later. Dreamers, TPS holders, immigrant farm workers, and others might be eligible for green cards even sooner. This is a bold approach and one with strong voter support, according to polls. And as this legislation advances in Congress, a virtual immigration summit is coming up Thursday here in Florida. This is billed as a bipartisan discussion about common sense ideas for immigration reform in this country. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush and Florida Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried are just some of the officials slated to speak at this virtual event, which you can Zoom on to on Thursday. We've got a preview right now as we welcome Kathy Carvajal, the Executive Director of Impact Fund. Kathy, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you. Also on the line, John Martinez, Executive Director of J.P. Morgan Private Bank in Orlando, a supporter of this event. John, good to have you as well.
Hello. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. We want your calls, too. What do you think is the right path for immigration reform in the United States? As we preview this Thursday's virtual Florida summit, give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. All right, Kathy, let's begin with you. You're proud of your immigrant roots. You were born in Miami, raised in both Miami and Ecuador, and you lead Impact Fund. That's the Immigration Partnership and Coalition Fund. Tell us a little bit about what's planned for Thursday as you and a slate of bold-faced names tackle this thorny subject of immigration reform.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share about our event. And, you know, we're very, very excited. This Thursday, we'll be coming together with, you know, bipartisan leaders from both sides of the aisle to talk about how do we approach this complex problem in a bipartisan way. We truly believe that immigration is, you know, the economic engine of our state and of our country. Immigrants fill such important jobs and essential work from agriculture to hospitality to healthcare, construction. And we know that in order for our economy to truly recover and move forward, we need to be able to move forward with a vision for immigration reform for a nation that is welcoming, strong, successful, and confident. So, you know, we are very, very excited for the conversation that's going to be taking place. We are also part of the National American Business Immigration Coalition, and we will be holding a national summit on Friday covering the same topics. We are very optimistic of the, you know, Biden proposal, but, you know, we're also optimistic for, you know, the other bills that are being filed mm-hmm. to kind of take immigration reform piece by piece. There's been a bipartisan DREAM Act filed by Senator Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin. There is, you know, the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which was passed last year in a bipartisan way, finding, you know, a path to be able to stabilize the workforce of agriculture, you know, around our country and in Florida, and also, you know, find a path for farm workers. And finally, you know, we're also very hopeful to be able to find a permanent solution for those that have temporary protected status. In the state of Florida, many of those folks are from Haiti. They're from Central America. You know, many of them have been here 10, 20 years, already have homes and children, grandchildren here. And, you know, we want to be able to find a way for them to be able to move forward with their lives and no longer be in limbo.
John Martinez, Executive Director of J.P. Morgan Private Bank in Orlando, with us as well. You were also appointed to the Orange County Board of County Commissioners by former Governor Rick Scott. This summit Thursday, John, is billed as a bipartisan discussion on immigration reform. But of course, one of the main reasons we haven't seen comprehensive immigration reform in this country is because of our political polarization. So how do you see this issue being addressed both in Florida and on Capitol Hill? Because as yet, we haven't been able to bring the two sides together.
Well, this has been a longstanding issue in Washington where you have had certain folks from both sides of the aisle try and work together on this, but just have not been able to put, you know, the ball in the end zone, unfortunately. I think now's the time. I think the climate in Washington may be such that we can go ahead and move this forward. Because really, this is it's a bipartisan thing. This is good for the economy. We're looking at a common sense approach to this that can appeal to both sides of the aisle. You know, we're dealing with an outdated immigration system right now, and allowing a lot of these folks to be able to come out of the shadows, earn legal status, and contribute more to the economy. You know, we're only realizing a fraction of the economic potential of the immigrants that make up 10, 11 million people in this country. And so that's due to outdated and complex laws and outdated priorities. And so we're just looking for a way to bring folks together and have particularly folks on the Republican side realize that this is actually a good thing for our country and for our economy.
Lots of tweets coming into the show about immigration. Here's one from Josh. I'll direct this one to you, Kathy. It's about the Dreamers. How will the legislation that's moving affect Dreamers? Those are young people who were born in this country, brought here to this country, I should say, by their parents, and are undocumented but want to learn and work in the U.S., the only country they've ever known. There is bipartisan support for some final piece of legislation protecting this group of young Americans. Where does the impact fund stand on the Dreamers?
Thank you so much for that question. We are absolutely 100% supportive of our Dreamers, of our young people who came to this country when they were children. Many of these folks have graduated from our high schools, are currently in or graduating from our colleges, are filling, you know, essential jobs on the front lines as healthcare workers. And, you know, we believe that the right thing to do, the American thing to do, is to, you know, help them regularize their status. The vast majority of Americans, both Republicans and Democrats, support a pathway to citizenship for Dreamers, and we absolutely think that this should be a priority.
Okay, and John Martinez, you know, this is what I keep coming back to. The polls show people are in favor of common sense, comprehensive solutions. Yet the polarization that we continue to see in Washington has prevented time and time again any kind of comprehensive legislation ever being passed. What are your biggest concerns about that happening again in the Senate, in the U.S. Senate?
Well, I think the polarization in Washington has only gotten to a fever pitch. And unfortunately, it's not good for our country where things have gotten. But, you know, I think there actually is an appetite right now in the Senate on the Republican side as well. I think one thing that could be a problem is if you see a large caravan at the border, something like that, leading up to immigration reform being passed, some sort of headline risk that could cause folks on the right to potentially rear back and have a little problem. Outside of that, I mean, I do think there is an appetite, and I do think we have a very strong potential for this to get done this time around. You know, like I said, you know, it's failed in the past, but I think, you know, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed, this could be the time it works.
And Kathy, we're not a border state, but immigration reform will have profound impacts on Florida's economy. Can you talk a little bit about that piece of this and the discussion you're going to be having at the event Thursday, the economic concerns?
Well, you know, the way that we see it is that we only have something to gain. 70% of undocumented immigrants are essential workers right now. You know, that includes agriculture, healthcare workers, and they're critical to building our economy. You know, the research shows that an earned path to citizenship for 11 million people would actually boost our country's GDP by $1.5 trillion over 10 years. This is something that's going to create jobs for Americans. Immigrants open new businesses. It's going to increase employment opportunities for all. So in terms of, you know, the cost, the benefits definitely would outweigh the cost.
What's your thought, too, about the fact that under the former administration, the Trump administration, immigration was the hallmark issue of former President Trump? He came to power pledging to build a wall on the southern border to keep undocumented immigrants out. The Biden approach is markedly different. It embraces undocumented arrivals, embraces temporary status. Legal status holders, makes getting a green card easier, embraces the Dreamers. What is your reply to people listening to this show right now who would have preferred the Trump approach to immigration rather than what we're going to be seeing from the Biden White House?
Well, I think it's really unfortunate how immigrants have been, you know, scapegoated for political gain. But I think that approach was rejected by voters in 2020. And it's time for us to move forward and to write the next chapter of America's story, you know, with a common values, rebuilding our immigration system with an earned path to citizenship for Dreamers, TPS holders, and essential workers. And there's so many families who've been waiting for the American public for a lasting and legislative solution. So I think that, you know, the tide is turning and that, you know, This isn't something that worked, and that's why we got the results that we got in 2020.
Another way the Biden administration has turned the page, they've rolled back the Trump administration's tougher citizenship civics test. That's just one example of changes. John Martinez, here's another tweet for you. Talk about the difference between asylum and refugees and point out that Canada has a merit-based system for visas, whereas the U.S. system is more family-oriented. This listener asks, will that change in order to draw in different types of immigrants? John Martinez.
Well, I would just start by saying that the United States of America, we have a long-standing tradition of welcoming refugees and asylum seekers. That tradition needs to continue. My own father came here as a refugee from Cuba in the 60s under that same principle. I would ask Kathy to address the differences in previous policy and what this is being proposed, but I just reiterate that this is a tradition of our nation and of our people, and I think that there is I think that most Americans can identify with that and recognize that this is something that needs to continue.
Kathy.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I would say the difference between refugees and asylum seekers is, you know, there's a process for refugees to get refugee designation in their home country. They're usually people who are, you know, in a situation where there is tremendous amount of conflict or war. And so, you know, they get designated a refugee status, and then they're, you know, allowed to come to the U.S., and they already come as refugees. The difference with an asylum seeker is generally an asylum seeker seeks asylum upon arriving to the U.S. And so then, you know, they have to prove, you know, why they believe that they're eligible for asylum. And then, you know, in many cases, you know, they wait while their cases are pending. Under the Trump administration, you know, instead of people being able to wait for their hearing and everything here in the U.S., they were forced to wait at the border in camps in Mexico in terrible conditions for months at a time. And that's one of the, you know, inhumane policies that were reversed back. Also in terms of refugee, I understand that in the previous administration, the numbers of refugees allowed was, you know, severely decreased. And it really is a shame because, you know, when refugees come to the U.S., it really is, you know, aspiring for that American dream and for freedom, you know, and they're leaving persecution back in their home country. So, you know, I definitely think that things are moving in a better direction. But, you know, there's only so much that can be done from the administration. The real solutions, the lasting solutions, have to be legislative.
And, right. And let me, you know, let me ask you about that. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is now saying that what she may do with President Biden's big piece of legislation is split it up into individual pieces because that has a better chance of passing Congress. We can expect strong Republican opposition to the big package the Biden White House sent to the Hill. So what do you think about this strategy? Do you think that makes more sense?
You know, we think that whatever is going to be supported by both sides is what makes most sense. You know, we are already looking at, you know, some of the piecemeal bills that are being filed, and we're, you know, certainly supportive of that. We just need to find movement forward, you know. So, you know, if people don't agree on, you know, one big package, how can we move forward with these smaller pieces? I think it's all about how do we get to progress. And, you know, there's various pieces that I think the vast majority of American voters and then also, you know, our legislators agree on. So let's make that happen and let's, you know, let's move forward with that. And that's why we need so much for, you know, our senators here in Florida, Senators Rubio and Senator Scott, to step forward and to join the overwhelming majority of Americans who support common sense and bipartisan immigration solutions.
John Martinez, you have former Governor Jeb Bush slated to speak at this virtual event, Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried, and a host of other officials and people involved in this, both Republicans and Democrats. But what about that? Florida's two senators, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott. At a certain point, Marco Rubio did support some of these measures, but then he backed away from that under political pressure. So what about Rubio and Scott?
You know, I can't speak to what they're thinking personally. I do know that they have both expressed interest in the past at supporting some sort of immigration reform. To your point earlier and to Nancy Pelosi's proposal, you know, perhaps a piecemeal approach to it would get more bipartisan support, particularly from some folks that might be politically inclined to avoid something more comprehensive. I do think that Senator Scott and Rubio, I do think they support immigration reform in some capacity. It's just a matter of trying to find a middle ground for some of the folks that might have some hesitation. But, you know, fortunately, we're starting to get more momentum and more of a groundswell of support from both sides. And as they see that and as they see that support continuing, I think that they'll feel more inclined to get behind something like what we're trying to do.
And Kathy, the legislature is looking at this too in the upcoming March legislative session. Here's a tweet from another listener. Two bills in the Florida House are taking aim at undocumented students and their ability to afford a college education. One bill would make tuition more affordable for students without citizenship. The other would make it more expensive. Where does the impact fund stand on what's happening in the legislature?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's really, really disappointing to see, you know, in 2014, in-state tuition was granted to Dreamers in Florida, as it should be, because these are folks that graduated from our high schools, you know, have grown up in our state and are Floridians, you know, except for a piece of paper. And, you know, that was something that was championed by, you know, by Republican members of the legislature, including our lieutenant governor. And, you know, it really is disappointing to see that, you know, that they would try to come after that. But it also shows that as long as, you know, our Dreamers are out in limbo with DACA instead of a permanent solution, they're going to continue being used as a political football. You know, I think what's really refreshing is the group of people that is coming together with us on Thursday. Coincidentally, it's the first day of CPAC, which is, you know, going to be taking off in Orlando. And, you know, we're hopeful that that at CPAC we're going to hear a different tune on immigration and a more embracing and welcoming
Well, let me ask you, Kathy, here's a comment on our Facebook page from Susan. She says the reason there's been no immigration reform is that it's a great fundraiser and energizer for the conservative base. Why would they want to take that tool out of the box?
That is unfortunately true, and it's very, very sad. And I hope that, you know, we can, you know, come back to being, you know, a country that is values-based, and that we're thinking about what is the best way for our country to move together forward, and, you know, thinking about the best thing for our communities and thinking about the best thing for our economy.
Okay. With all of that said, this event is called Florida Thriving, Bipartisan Immigration Solutions 2021, a virtual immigration summit coming up Thursday at 10 a.m. People can register online at your website, yes?
Absolutely. You can go to our website. It's Impact Fund, impactfund.org, and go to events, and it's under upcoming. So impactfund.org, impactfund.org.
Well, thank you, Kathy Harvajal, Executive Director of Impact Fund, John Martinez, Executive Director, J.P. Morgan Private Bank in Orlando. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And much more coming up later in the hour. Best-selling author Steve Barry is out with a new thriller, a perfect read for these pandemic times. We'll tell you about The Kaiser's Web. But up next.
We intend to eliminate the barriers to accessing mental health care. And one of those barriers is the stigma that is attached to mental health care.
Preventing suicide here on the First Coast. The new and free mental health portal Here Tomorrow is active at the beaches. That's coming up. Don't go away.
Cindy Tomasetti of Watson Realty Corp. Offering full-time assistance to buyers and sellers with white glove service, video tours, and remote transactions available. Info at cindyt@watsonrealtycorp.com.
BritBox and PBS Passport are now offering the best of all your favorite British drama, comedy, and more when you sign up at jacksbundle.com. Start watching today.
In celebration of Henry Louis Gates Jr.'s new documentary, The Black Church, WJCT is collecting stories and memories of your experiences. What does the Black Church mean to you? What role has it played in your life? Share your thoughts and memories and have your stories archived for future generations. Visit wjct.org/blackchurch for instructions.
Welcome back. Well, it's the most preventable form of death. And here's some good news for you right now. A new suicide prevention collaborative is active at the beaches right now. The organization Here Tomorrow is working to get the word out that there is free mental health support in our area for people who are depressed and thinking of taking their own life. I wanted to learn more about this. So the other day I spoke with the new executive director of Here Tomorrow, Hannah Hackworth. Take a listen. Hannah Hackworth, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa, for having me.
And you opening up Here Tomorrow is so timely. We are dealing with a suicide and mental health care epidemic in this country. Tell us about the mission of Here Tomorrow.
We intend to eliminate the barriers to seeking, to accessing mental health care. And one of those barriers is the stigma that is attached to mental health care. And our intention is to create something that did not exist before in our community. When someone walks through the doors of a therapy practice or an outpatient treatment center, that person has already made a decision to seek professional help, and they've acted on it. What about all of those people that are stuck in what we call in behavioral health the contemplation stage of change? So they're thinking that they might have a problem and that they may need to seek help, but they haven't taken any steps towards that. What about people who have recognized that they're feeling depressed, they're feeling hopeless, or they've had suicidal thoughts, but they haven't taken that next step? Maybe they can't afford the copays involved with treatment. Maybe they don't have the transportation they need. Maybe they don't have the emotional support that they need in their life to take that next step. We also want to support families. The mental health care system was not exactly designed with family members in mind. So what about those family members who know that their loved one is in serious need of help, or who feels afraid to ask that question? Feels afraid to ask, are you thinking of ending your life? We want to be there for those family members. And so we have designed a core service model to reach those families and reach those folks who are at risk, connect with them, and over a period of time provide that support and assistance with accessing the resources that they need to move forward in their life.
Which is so needed. Mental health, as you note on your materials, is the number one health challenge right now in this area. And you're the first organization with a primary focus on addressing the suicide epidemic and bringing down all of these barriers to care that you mentioned, which is such a challenge for so many people. So when people contact you at Here Tomorrow, and it's heretomorrow.org, or you can call 827-3787. Mm-hmm. Tell us what the experience will be like for patients seeking help.
Okay, all right. Well, we have intentionally stayed away from healthcare language. So we have a welcome room, not a waiting room. We have conversation rooms, not a consultation room or a visitation room. So we are a physical and virtual space where people can feel comfortable having a conversation about mental health. We are here to listen and provide support, meet people where they are, and help them to take those next steps if that's where they are.
And so this is a mental health collaborative, right? This is sort of a new model that you and your colleagues have come up with to serve the community.
Join with the entire community to reimagine how we can make mental health care accessible for everyone who needs it. And so we intend to do that through collaboration, through community partnerships, and we are building a network of mental health and social service providers that we will work with to link people with the help and care that they need same day or next day if it's a crisis situation. And then we also are referring to those folks as our helping collaborators. And then we also plan to establish relationships with identification collaborators. So those organizations that will help us to identify those who are most at risk. We don't plan to sit here and wait for those folks to come to us. We plan to meet them where they are. And so we plan to identify with collaborate with emergency departments, primary care offices, inpatient psychiatric units, law enforcement, to identify these people and meet them where they are and begin that process of building a relationship and supporting them in their recovery.
And let's point out, this is free, right? Anyone in crisis that contacts Here Tomorrow won't be charged.
That's correct. Our services are free, and for those where affordability of care is the barrier, we have funding to assist with outpatient treatment.
So important, because so many people cannot afford to get the services they so desperately need. And so glad to talk to you, Hannah. Again, if you're struggling, if you're having suicidal thoughts, this is a free new mental health collaborative on the First Coast set up just to help you. It's called Here Tomorrow. Visit heretomorrow.org or call them at 827-3787 or visit them at 910 3rd Street in Neptune Beach. She is Executive Director Hannah Hackworth. Again, heretomorrow.org. Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Melissa.
Well, here is some great news to share in this pandemic. Jacksonville University and Baptist Health are working together to address the incredible demand for qualified nurses in Northeast Florida. Yeah. They're launching a new program. It'll offer students an accelerated path to earn a Bachelor of Science in Nursing in just 12 months. And there's the opportunity to possibly get a job at Baptist Health upon graduation and licensure. We're so pleased to welcome Professor Amber Santos from JU's Kegwin School of Nursing. Professor Santos, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi, Professor Santos. Are you there? All right. As we try to Hi, Professor Santos.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Also on the line.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And also on the line from Baptist Health, Chief Learning Officer Liz Bruno. Hi, Liz.
Good morning.
All right, let's begin with you, Professor Santos from JU's Kegwin School of Nursing. You helped develop this curriculum so that people can, in rapid, lightning-fast fashion, get their nursing degree in just a year. That's pretty amazing. Tell us about this.
Yes, so this was an idea that came about with Liz Bruno and our provost, Christine Sapienza, and they asked a few faculty to get together and see if it could actually happened, and we see if we could truly graduate students in 12 months, and we put our minds together, and we absolutely can, and we are looking forward to doing it.
Okay, this is called the Jacksonville University and Baptist Health 12-month second degree BSN program. Liz, for people who are qualified, they will not only get their degree in 12 months, they could earn a work promise agreement from Baptist Health. So tell us a little bit about Baptist Health's role in all of this.
Well, we've been extremely pleased to work with JU on this project right from the beginning. And we've been part of looking at the curriculum that the very talented faculty put together and working with our HR team and our legal teams throughout both organizations to see how we could make this work. And we came up with a product that we think is going to be very, very exciting. And our at Baptist, our role is going to be providing registered nurses who are current employees of ours, members. And they are actually going to be on the unit with the students acting as clinical faculty. They will also be adjunct faculty for JU.
All right. So this is a really well-structured program, it sounds like, with some nice enticements for potential students. Professor, you're trying to get the word out to students to enroll at the Kegwin School of Nursing at JU. And let's talk about this, Professor Santos, in the context of this pandemic. The need is greater than ever for qualified nurses. Talk about that a little bit.
Yes, it definitely is. I think that the need has been, you know, increasing anyway. We know that there are currently, you know, over a million RNs over 50 years old, and that means that's about a third of the workforce that could retire in the next 10 to 15 years. So even prior to the pandemic, you know, we knew that we needed an increased workforce in nurses. So really this program is tailored to supply our community with well-qualified, educated, caring nurses in a shorter period of time. We have the classic traditional program. We also have the 16-month accelerated. But this partnership with FACTUS with the 12-month, it's a very purposeful education, and we are looking forward to this partnership so that we can produce those much-needed nurses into our community sooner.
Yeah. Liz Bruno, Baptist Health. You know, the nurses and the doctors and the other frontline healthcare workers have been absolute heroes in this pandemic, and they have paid a terrible price. Some have died. Many have gotten sick. People that work in the healthcare field have suffered incredible trauma trying to care for patients. Can you share a little bit about what that has been like at your organization, Baptist Health?
Certainly. We, like every other hospital in the United States, has truly experienced just that. We have had nurses and physicians and respiratory therapists and others truly work around the clock to care for these very, very sick patients. And we've recognized the need to deal with the exhaustion, to deal with the mental stress. So even early in the pandemic, we put together resilience tents, and we put together methods by which our staff at all levels could access help, counseling, rest, whatever they needed. And we continue to do this. We've worked very closely with our behavioral health department, and that's truly been a remarkable gift. And we've seen very, very serious situations be able to be turned around because of that. So it's mm-hmm. been wonderful.
Yeah. And how do you see this new pipeline of new nurses, Liz, helping not just Baptist, but all of the hospital and health systems in the region? How critical is the shortage?
It's incredibly critical. We have wonderful schools in the Jacksonville area. We really do. And there are many ways one can become a nurse. But this particular program for, again, second-degree students who have taken a number of prerequisites is a very, very intense program. But if you can do that in 1 year and sit for boards and pass, then that's going to offer you an incredible career because of what nursing has to offer. We believe that we need to look differently at how we prepare nurses and how we continue to educate them, because so much in the field changes constantly. And so it's the original preparation, it's the reskilling, it's the upskilling. All of those elements need to be addressed so that we can help make sure we have enough talented clinicians to provide care to our patients and our community.
All right. So with all of that said, Professor Amber Santos, JU Kegwin School of Nursing, is this curriculum active now? Are you seeking applicants right now? And this is, I think, anyone with a bachelor's degree is eligible. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And we are seeking applicants. We've had tremendous, response so far from interest in students, and they have to meet those traditional prerequisites for second degree nursing. So, you know, the typical anatomy, chemistry, microbiology. And yes, so if they go to our website, it's just www.ju.edu/nursing. And if they click on, there's accelerated program, they can go to undergraduate accelerated. They can look to see what are the different minimum qualifications and phone numbers if they want to speak to someone in person and if they have any questions.
How expensive is this degree? What's the cost?
So that is actually very slightly. We actually have found some donors in our community that are looking to sponsor and give scholarships to these students. So we have been so happy with the outreach that we've received so far. So it varies from students. So that's why we really recommend that they go on the website and get connected with someone from financial aid, because it does vary from student to student.
Okay, but can you give me a ballpark? Because I know a lot of people listening, they might be interested, but they just automatically will think, well, maybe I can't afford to do this.
Yes. So I would say ballpark, if I had to just give, you know, a number, it would probably be in the, you know, 50,000-ish range. But once again, it depends on if we continue to get the support that we've been getting so far. There are some students that are going to be blessed with much less than that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And Liz Bruno, nursing is a career that pays well over time. And it's an in-demand profession. You'll always have a job. That's the positive of getting a nursing degree, right?
It's one of the great positives of getting a nursing degree. It is no matter where you go in the United States, you can get a job if you are a nurse. And I like to think that, you know, nurses are decently paid now. They truly are. But the most important thing really is the opportunity to make a difference in someone's life. And at the end of the day, that's the important thing.
Check it out at ju.edu, a new accelerated 12-month nursing degree you can obtain from JU's esteemed Kegwin School of Nursing in collaboration with Baptist Health. Full disclosure, Baptist Health is a sponsor here at WJCT News. And I want to thank you both so much, Professor Amber Santos from JU's Kegwin School of Nursing and Liz Bruno, Chief Learning Officer on the line from Baptist Health. Ladies, kudos to you both, and let's get some more nurses out there.
Absolutely.
We will.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. Thank you.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. And still to come, New York Times bestselling author and Florida resident Steve Barry is out with a new thriller this week, the latest in his Cotton Malone series. A great read in the pandemic for everybody. We'll go inside the pages of The Kaiser's Web next.
Nadia is a sixth grade Egyptian immigrant navigating the ups and downs of middle school, and she's the hero of Bassem Youssef's new children's book, The Magical Reality of Nadia. The heart surgeon turned political satirist joins us to talk about the unique experiences of immigrant children, which he learned about from observing his own family. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm I'm Peter O'Dowd.
The liberation of Kuwait has now entered a final phase.
Operation Desert Storm ended Iraq's occupation of Kuwait in 1991, but thousands of American troops came home with health problems that became known as Gulf War illness. They're still struggling to get help. That's next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
The next fresh air. Jonathan Cohn, author of the new book, The 10-Year War, Obamacare and the Unfinished Crusade for Universal Coverage. It looks back on the politics of the Affordable Care Act, why it ended up looking the way it did, why those compromises were made, what it tells us about our governing institutions, and how it's functioning today. Join us.
Today at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Big Tech's latest play? Bitcoin. As a result, this cryptocurrency is now worth more than $1 trillion. Investors believe that sends a signal that we all should be paying attention to. So perhaps it's time we better understood what it is. I'm Jen White. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Florida-based author Steve Barry has a new thriller out today. It's the latest in his long-running and popular Cotton Malone series, a great escapist novel to get right into. It's called The Kaiser's Web, and he recently told me about it. Steve Barry, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be back again, Melissa.
And you have done it again, a new Cotton Malone adventure in your long-running and best-selling series. It's out this week. Tell us about The Kaiser's Web.
It deals with something from World War II, something I stumbled across in research a few years ago, something that's real, something I think that will shock the reader because it certainly shocked me. And so I wove a modern-day thriller out of this thing that comes out of World War II, and two candidates are vying for the German chancellorship, and these secrets between them and this particular secret from World War II all play into that election, and Cotton Malone gets caught up in that. And it all emanates from what happened on the night of April 30th, 1945, underneath Berlin in the Führer bunker. And this is not a book about Hitler surviving the war. This is a book about something else, something that actually did happen, something real, with a character who disappeared the night of April 30th, 1945, Martin Bormann, who was never seen or heard from again. And I wanted to explore what may have happened to this guy.
In fact, did he manage to escape? Did he survive? That's the question, right?
It's a good question. No one knows. We have no clue. Supposedly, his body was found in the 1970s, but testing on it was not done very well, and the remains were destroyed and cremated and scattered in the ocean so that no more further testing could be done. So we still have no idea what happened to Martin Bormann.
This is something, though, that fascinates millions all over the world, and there have been no shortage of theories and sometimes conspiracy theories of people who believe Hitler escaped to South America. And there were real live Nazis, many of them, that did escape to places
Absolutely.
Like South America. So you kind of begin from there. But so it's a blend of fact and fiction like most of your books, it sounds like.
It is. But I deal with something that happened in late 1944, something Martin Bormann put into place. Something that's real. I don't want to really talk about it in too much detail because it's a surprise in the novel, and I'd like for the reader to be a little bit surprised, but it is something that was there. All of those Nazis and all of those Germans who were fleeing to South America, that wasn't happenstance. There was a reason for that to happen, and this is not a novel, again, about the Fourth Reich coming back and taking over again. It's something a little more basic, a little more practical, a little more realistic, and it actually did happen.
So when you say it didn't just happen, that there was strategy and planning behind it, what do you mean by that?
Plans that were put into place, that people were to go to certain spots. The wealth of Germany was pretty much sapped off in late 1944 and early 1945 and transferred all over the world. Bormann did not want a repeat of what happened after World War I when Germany was decimated. Instead, they billions and billions of assets, patents, all kinds of things were distributed all over the world. And to this day, we don't know what happened to them.
Hmm. Now, for years, you have been creating bestsellers around your character of Cotton Malone and other books. These are books that share a reverence for history, and they make history come alive for your readers. And in this pandemic, I'm curious to ask you, how do you see people embracing reading in a new way when they've been on lockdown?
Well, they actually are. Book sales are doing very, very well. 2020 was a banner year for the sale of books. So people are reading because they actually are at home, and they can escape with a book. And my books are perfect for that, because this book, you're going to go to South America, South Africa, Switzerland, Austria, Germany. You're going to get a full run around the world and see these places and deal with a mystery from World War II that hasn't been dealt with very much. This particular subject matter that I'm dealing with has not been explored with as much vigor as all of the others. So for right now, the pandemic has been really, really good for books.
And good for you, too, not only for you as an author, but also for your foundation that you run with your wife, History Matters, where you really champion keeping history education vibrant. There's a lot more at your website, steveberry.org. I always want to mention that. But in the meantime, it's exciting to see you have a new novel. It's out today, The Kaiser's Web, Steve Berry's latest Cotton Malone thriller. So pick it up, everybody, wherever books are sold, and get back to that pandemic reading, as you said, Steve. So thank you so much, and congratulations.
Thank you for having me.
Check it out at steveberry.org, too, as Steve will be doing some virtual book events in the region in the upcoming weeks. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Thanks to all of our guests and callers, too. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep those emails coming. We really value your feedback. Send them to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And you can catch our podcast up later today wherever you like to listen. You can also listen to it if you download the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.